Hey guys, welcome to Finally Clicked, the podcast where we discuss business, leadership, and personal development. My name is Margaret Smith, and I'm the Director of Operations for Pickett Street Properties, a real estate team out of Bothell, Washington. And I'll be here every week with our owner and team leader, Jesse D. Moore. We'll be digging into concepts and ideas that have helped us both personally and professionally. And you'll also get a chance to hear from local and national experts that we know provide massive value to get to the point where it all finally clicks.
Welcome to our ASMR.
Welcome.
Finally Clicked podcast. Are you ready? Are you ready?
Hello, everybody. This is Jesse Moore.
And Margaret Smith.
I'm drinking whiskey.
I haven't taken a sip of mine yet, but I will be.
I feel like, you know what? Let's cheers. Cheers.
Click.
Click.
Oh, God.
We recorded a podcast yesterday, and like the theme of the day, it failed to work.
It didn't come to fruition.
Did not come to fruition.
No.
It was kind of it was a bipolar episode.
That's actually probably the best way to describe it.
It was like, half of it was great and half of it was terrible.
Yeah.
So that was the universe telling us to try again.
Yeah.
And we had a long day and we have to do this.
Yeah.
We have a public crying out for our episodes.
Crying. A couple people have texted me asking where's the next
right?
one. Yeah.
So we owe it to our devoted fans to do this, even in the waning light of day.
Well, yeah, we had a day retreat today at your house, and we're coming into the office after the retreat.
How much work have I done
You're dedicated.
Today, by the way? I made from scratch cast iron biscuits.
I have to say, yeah.
And spicy honey chicken.
Yeah.
And I cut celery.
And mimosas.
And mimosas.
Yeah.
Come on.
I know. No, I was completely relaxing like the entire time. It was really nice.
Yeah. Well, I'm exhausted because I cooked a meal for my team.
It was delicious.
And then we set goals. And
yeah.
I feel like we should explain the intro because we kind of were weird.
We didn't actually explain it. Oh, my God.
When we did this.
It was so good when it finally clicked.
And it was
Yeah, so you should introduce it because Jesse introduced me to a new concept yesterday that I knew nothing about.
Okay, and let me set expectations today.
Please do.
I'm good at setting expectations.
You are really good
like
at it.
I'm going to lead with my strength.
Yeah.
And say, if you're looking for like the podcast episode that you send everyone and tell, this is so amazing, this is so great, you guys have to check these guys out, this isn't it.
No, I think it might be, but it's a different kind of episode.
It's a drinking episode, so yes, it could be. But that's not our intent. Our intent today is to have you get to know us.
Yes.
And so not every single one of these is going to have an agenda or a topic
or specific or tips to walk away with. Yeah.
Sometimes we're just going to riff, and you're just going to get to know Jesse, and you're just going to get to know Margaret, and then you'll have a better understanding of why we are the way we are.
It's true.
So yesterday I opened the podcast episode in this ASMR voice, and you were so thoroughly confused.
Completely.
At what I was doing.
I had no idea.
And I kept mentioning ASMR, and you're like, what are you talking about? So we actually had you Google on air.
Yep.
What ASMR is.
I've never heard of this, ever. I can't believe, I feel like I'm way behind.
And I had actually, after exploring it, I said, well, maybe we should become the ASMR real estate team where we only talk in ASMR.
Oh my God.
And market in ASMR.
So, you guys, if you Google this or if you go on YouTube and just put in ASMR, it's autonomous sensory meridian response. And it says the sole purpose of ASMR is to relax people. The ASMR community is constantly growing on YouTube, and ideally, they are meant to give the viewer a relaxing tingle at the back of their head and or spine, and it usually involves exactly that. Clinking ice, gentle whispering, relaxing hand movements, smacking of the lips, nail tapping, scratching on hard surfaces, or brushing sounds. There you go. Oh my word. I don't even know. And I've verified with every human I run into since then, I've been asking them if they know what ASMR is. 9 times out of 10, it's a no. I have found one person.
And I've known about it for years, and I just think it's one of the oddest things on the internet.
It's interesting.
And if you have, so if you don't know what it is, you should actually go to Google and, or not Google, you should go to YouTube.
Yeah, YouTube.
And look at some ASMR mm-hmm. videos because they're the most bizarre things you've ever seen.
So interesting.
So I'm telling, I think there's an avenue here in real estate though. Can you imagine? Like,
oh my God, that listing presentation was so great.
No, welcome to this industrial craftsman in Shoreline.
$425,000.
It's so quiet here in the backyard.
What yeah. the heck?
You know, we live in...
But you know what? We,
these
I
are
needed
strange
that,
times.
I needed that comedic break yesterday. I really did. So that's why it broke up the episode in a really fun way. And so I'm sad that some of that content is gone. But like you said, we haven't had a fail like that in the 8 episodes that we've done. It's always been like we... Because my tenant last night asked me... Now, I really can't call her a tenant. She's really a friend, Layla. She asked, she's like, do you guys rehearse before you go on? And I said, no. We do have some notes and we have specific points we want to get across. And she was like... I really like that it's more conversational because I feel like I'm actually, it's translating really well and the content's speaking to me. So it's so cool to hear that.
I think the conversational method is what works best for us.
It does.
Especially in this. Because, yeah. you know, we can riff all day long.
Yeah. Well, I do think it's a good learning experience because I don't think, I think business owners and their admin don't listen to other people, other business owners and their admin talk. And so just to hear us as an example might open up some minds for people, I guess, or new avenues of ways of communicating.
Well, so I opened you up to the whole new world, this whole new
ASMR.
World of online.
And Layla was going to use it last night to go to sleep, so I haven't heard yet how it worked.
Well, I'm guessing it. I don't know.
I don't
Whatever.
Know. I don't know.
It's bizarre. Mm-hmm. And I also made you watch an episode of 60 Minutes today. Well, not an episode, just one of the stories,
mm-hmm.
a segment.
Mm-hmm. With Elon Musk.
What'd you think of that?
I really liked it.
So the segment was Leslie Stahl, who's been a journalist since the Great Depression.
A long time.
Like, she's not young. And she interviewed Elon Musk, and it was a hatchet job. Mm-hmm. Like, out of the gates, she was, I mean...
Well, I understood what you meant when you told me this before I watched it. She absolutely was like an attack.
I'd highly recommend if you can watch it on demand or watch it online, watch this segment. Because, I mean, I love Elon Musk. The guy is a genius. He's a pioneer. There's so much to like about him, quite mm-hmm. honestly. His whole mission is to save the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And he's doing that in all three of his companies.
Yeah.
SpaceX is in case we don't save the Earth. And then Solar City is renewable energy.
Yeah.
And Tesla is getting away from gas-powered engines, mobility. And now, and then the Boring Company is actually digging tunnels to expedite automotive traffic, ease traffic in general. And so this Leslie's, I swear to God, it was like Detroit, Michigan paid CBS to go after Tesla.
Uh-huh.
Because they're just like, well, GM is closing plants down and laying people off. Tesla is hiring and they want to buy these plants. And what kind of crazy people are Tesla?
Yeah.
Expanding into... a market that's contracting.
Yeah.
But it's not the same market.
Well, no, yeah. It's I thought one of the most interesting parts for me, because I just am always interested in how humans view others and what their motivations are. And she absolutely, obviously thought the worst of him. Because when he said that he basically was giving away his playbook to other companies, she said, you are? And it was like... And he said, yeah, the whole purpose behind this is to make a cleaner Earth. And she is dumbfounded by that. Like, couldn't believe it.
How about as a reporter, you do some background checking, and you find out the fact that he open sourced all of the patents for Tesla. How about you should know that before you go into an interview? And then said when he goes, yeah, we open source this. Like, he's very altruistic when it comes to that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, anyone that developed the technology to make a car go 300 miles on an electrical charge.
Yeah.
Could make billions of dollars on just the patent.
Yeah.
Alone.
Yeah.
And he gives it away. He gives it away so the competition can make better vehicles.
Yep.
So that we stop burning gasoline and save our planet. Like, he clearly knows what his objective is. And Leslie just seemed so uninformed when interviewing him.
Mm-hmm.
And just was mocking him about smoking pot on Joe Rogan's podcast, about his impulsive communication on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
and then she was making comments, I guess, of the work environment. And I had no idea how she got that information or what kind of information she got. But she said that, like, the ambulances had been called there over 100 times or something within the last few months. And he was like, they have? I'm completely unaware of that. Like,
well, no, and what was great about his answer is he's like, I am in the factory.
He was there for a full week. Like, he said, like, 120 hours.
Yeah. 80 to 120 hours in the factory. So he would know if an ambulance showed up.
Yeah.
Like, that was his point. He's like, I actually don't think that's right because I'm there. And, she was like, hating on a billionaire because he's a billionaire.
No, and I'm sure he's got his thing. Like, anybody who's insanely smart definitely has their quirks. I mean, anybody we go back to, I mean, I've heard similar things about Steve Jobs in terms of how he managed. And we go back, and Pablo Picasso, like we've talked about with Iris, there's just examples of different types of genius. And usually you have some sort of quirk. And so...
Well, one of Elon's is that if you watch him talk, and I'm this way too. If I can compare myself to the genius that is Elon Musk for a second.
I'm so
careful about the words that I say.
Well, yes. Right? And like, I can tell he was too.
I'm aware of it by listening to this podcast.
Yeah.
It's like, come on, Jesse, speak faster.
Yeah.
And the reason I don't is because I mean every word I say.
Yeah.
Like in life.
Yeah.
You know this about me.
Yeah.
I'm so filtered.
So you've listened to the podcast back and you think you need to talk faster.
Yeah, I know I need to talk faster.
Interesting.
And to me, because when I can hear myself thinking, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Because I know how I think and I know how I talk. And so when I watch him talk and answer a question, I can see him.
Processing.
He's looking.
Filtering.
To the different sides of his brain
where
he's trying to get the correct answer before he responds.
Yep.
And it's a little robotic, perhaps. Zuckerberg got the same flack when he presented to Congress. I'm just so horrified. Can I just say for a second? I'm just so horrified at our legislators who are, they don't know anything.
Oh, nothing about Facebook.
They interviewed Zuckerberg. They didn't even know how he made money.
Yeah.
Like, how does your little website of yours make money? And he's like, we sell ads. And...
pretty bad.
And Leslie Stahl, in talking to Elon, was the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she didn't have a she didn't understand what he's doing.
If I were in her shoes or someone else and I was going to interview someone, I would either do the research or I would say, I can't do the interview. Because I don't dip my toes into something like that to talk to an expert about something when I know nothing.
And I like Leslie Stahl. I know I'm familiar with her work and I think she does a good job. I was just so confused at how biased this piece was.
Yeah.
Like, we have some exciting interviews coming up.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, I can't wait to tell people who we're interviewing.
Yeah, it's going to be ridiculous.
And this is not, like, you know, this is not our team leader. This is not people that are, like, local celebrities. We're going to be talking to,
national
and
bigger.
National level.
Yeah.
Game changers.
No, it's huge.
And
those,
it's
like...
happening. And you know what I'm doing to prepare? I'm reading their books.
Yeah.
I'm looking up their interviews.
Yep.
I want the context. I want to have context before I step into that room.
Totally, completely. Then you can ask better questions. You can understand where they're coming from. You can go deeper in the conversation because we're only going to have that 45 to 55 minutes with them.
Yeah, and these people are asked questions all the time.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they're mostly superficial questions.
Yeah, we want to be asking the best questions.
That's right.
Yeah, we are. I'm so excited.
We might just do the interview in
ASMR.
I almost just said one of their names because I was like, I bet they would really appreciate that. They probably love that.
So, yeah, we'll have some announcements coming up very soon. I think maybe we'll have an announcement next week for one of them.
Yes, I think we will.
All right, so next week, it'll be our Christmas present
to you. Oh, that's a great idea, yeah.
Our Christmas present to you will be an announcement of an upcoming podcast interview that we're going to be doing.
Yeah.
And one of the speakers... for the Pacific Northwest Admin Retreat that Margaret is planning, actively planning right now.
Yep.
And
it's gonna be it's gonna be out of control.
You know, like I
like if so there funny. Could be like fangirl shirts for this. I mean, I guess there are. I guess I'm wearing one. Yeah.
No, but I'm really proud of you because you just thought big a while ago. You know, you had Monique, Simon Sinek's assistant, speak at the retreat last year, along with other great speakers. But getting Simon Sinek's assistant was
a big deal.
Baller.
Yeah, it was baller. Right? It was.
And
yeah.
This year is going to be bigger than that.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
Like, one of these speakers, I think, is on that level or higher.
Mm-hmm.
Just one of them.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking about the other people yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I like doing things like that people think are impossible and making them possible.
Oh.
I think.
Should we talk about our little tiff yesterday?
Yes. Oh, that? Well, sure we can.
What were
but
you
honestly,
thinking about?
Well, I was thinking, I'm just thinking a lot in my Miracle Morning times when I have all this time alone with myself. But I've realized something I really enjoy doing that's one of my passions is doing anything that someone in my community or my area or my sphere thinks is impossible and making it appear possible to them so that they can then take it and maybe improve part of their life. Because I think, I feel like I'm surrounded by some really good, like good thinkers and some high achievers, but there's other people that could achieve more and just don't want to, or they don't want to do the work, or they don't think it's really possible. And what I've realized, what's these last couple of years have taught me is that it's so much more possible than we realize. Because actually all it is doing the hard thing. It's sitting down or it's asking the right questions, or it's just, all I did for that speaker was go on their web. I went on Simon Sinek's website. I filled out the form that asks for a speaker. I talked to the guy. We made a connection. And it happened. It wasn't like it took months. Like I submitted the ask. And I think we just, especially as admin, we have the kind of personalities where we need to stop just doubting ourselves. And this doesn't just this is not just about the retreat. This is about your work that you do every day. We can do a lot more for our teams and for our companies than I think most people realize.
Yeah, I mean, I've been really focused on intention. I think that'll be a separate podcast before the first of the year.
It's that'd be a good one.
Power of intention. And I guess the reason I think about it, and it seems like an oh, duh kind of statement, but I was thinking, like, I want to write a book in my lifetime. I was published 3 times before I graduated college. My path was laid out before me to be a writer. You know, I thought I'd write 12 books. And life took me in a different direction. And that's not my focus anymore. It is something I have a natural ability in. And I think it's healthy for me to do it. I think it's therapeutic.
I kind of want to write a book, too.
For me. But, yeah, and me thinking it isn't going to make anything happen.
No, yeah.
Right? That's what I realized. Is me just thinking, well, one day I'll write a book. Isn't actually getting me any closer to the goal.
Yeah.
The only thing that gets it done is intention.
Now, you are an excellent writer. People need to read what you're going to write. Well, they need to read about what's in your head. They really do.
I appreciate
that's part
that.
Of why I like this podcast, because honestly, we've talked about this before. People don't always get to know you or get to spend time with you, and so by this podcast, they're really getting to. And so, like, even my tenant, my friend Layla now, is like, Jesse's super intelligent. This is interesting to listen to and hear you guys go back and forth. And I said, yeah, I know. People don't get that.
I like this. I like the direction this is going.
We're moving away from ASMR. Focus. Yeah, no, you need to write a book. And this will be my challenge for you because I want to write a book on happiness or something around happiness and how to be happy. I don't know what exactly. I'm going to write my book before you.
Before me?
Yeah.
Well, mine's going to be longer.
See, I can't challenge you. It doesn't get you riled up at all.
That is bob and
you're
leave.
Like, boom,
bob and
boom.
Leave.
It's going to be longer.
Oh, yeah, you're going to be done first.
Are you going to write short stories or like long chapters? Or what's your writing preference?
You know, on that podcast we threw away yesterday,
yeah,
I actually mentioned one of my ideas.
Yes, you did. And I think it's a great idea. It sounds super cool.
How did we get on that topic? And yesterday's throwaway episode was very random.
Why don't you just tell your life story? Because we were talking about growing up or something, and you were like, no, not going to do it. But I am going to write a book someday about possibly like some of my experiences. I don't know, though, what exactly led us to that, but you were talking about
all
the time on the horse.
Well, we were talking about extroverts.
Yes, and all that time. I was like, how did you really do it? Because I really can't imagine for 9 years, from 9 to 18, you being on a horse by yourself, nobody around, no music. What the heck do you do with yourself?
So what my experience growing up was, I grew up on a big cattle ranch in Montana. It was 5 miles from town, but that may as well have been 100 miles because I couldn't drive. You know, like, my parents didn't go to town often. And so most days I would ride horseback 2 to 5 hours. And we covered that. That was basically from the ages of, like, 9 to 21. And how interesting that was for me, because I'm an extrovert and I like to be around people.
Yeah.
And putting me on a horse for 2 to 5 hours by myself was not a good paramount idea. To torture. And my father loved it because he's an introvert and he loves horses and he loves the country, and that's great for him. So he kind of I think he misunderstands the dread I had about riding horses.
Yeah.
Or doing that type of work. And it wasn't that I didn't enjoy it. It was that it was just harder for me because I'm an extrovert. And so it was torturous. It felt torturous to, you know, be trapped in my head for 2 to 5 hours at a time.
Yeah.
And so I had this idea as a children's book is to go into my brain at that age, right, where I animate and then have it, like, animate the world around me.
Yeah.
Because I would make everything something. I'd make a rock, you know, a palace or a castle, and I'd make sagebrush the, you know, an army or something. You know, like, I would name things and I'd interact with my environment.
That's that's an unbelievable use of your imagination.
And I think it'd just be my kids, you know, I'm seeing their books at 9 to 12 years old. And I could see a book like that working, mm-hmm. you know, where I talk about a 9 to 12 year old who has to do things they don't want to do.
Yeah.
And how they create this, like, other universe in their head, mm-hmm. in their imagination.
Kind of like the modern day cowboy.
Well, I'm not a modern day cowboy. Like, I'm not trying to be a modern day cowboy.
I know. That's what my mom calls you, though. Jesse the cowboy. Like, you don't really, because my dad loves Westerns and everything having to do with Western movies, you know, all that, but older stuff. Like, you don't really hear a whole lot about what's happening now. Or, like, people don't have as much of a...
Oh, no, it's terrible. And I can say this, you know, because I watched, what's it called? Oh, there's a series called Yellowstone on some Paramount Network. And it has Kevin Costner in it. And it's the premise behind the series is it's supposed to be like a Sons of Anarchy type show where there's this rich cowboy family that owns this land right up against Yellowstone Park. Okay. It's like the best land ever. And it's about this fight between the cowboy's way of life and the encroaching cultural development of the land and, you know. And it's just the worst show ever because it's not accurate at all. They do stuff you would never do as a cowboy.
Okay.
And so, yeah, cowboys in that way of life are very poorly represented in media.
Yeah.
And, you know, my father is an author and he's very committed to showing a very true representation of that lifestyle. And his books are about that. And he's a local historian who talks very much about that. Like, he is a purist. If you couldn't do it on a horse, it wasn't worth doing. So we never had motorcycles. We never had ATVs.
Yeah.
Literally. Until as soon as I left, you know, then he started getting ATVs and stuff. But I had to go get a horse, saddle it up, go get him, even if it was just across the street.
That whole life is just so different. Like, I can't even imagine. It's so different. It's so, like, grueling. And then you talk about, I mean, the difference between living there and the money you make there versus the money you can make here. It's just so...
When I was a freshman in college, Montana's average income was $22,000.
Wow.
And so that was circa 1995-ish, 96. But still, it's incredibly hard to make a good living there.
Yeah.
And that's why there's less than 1 million people in the state of Montana. Jeez. There's more people in our county than there is in the entire state of Montana.
That's insane.
So, I'm guessing.
Now, two of my really good friends live there. Yeah.
Well, it's beautiful.
Yeah, and
it's
Bozeman. It's breathtaking. And, yeah, it is gorgeous.
And everything costs money, mm-hmm. and the most beautiful places to live are never the cheapest places to live. Mm-hmm. So
with that kind of a children's book, it'd probably be like short chapters. I always thought you were going to write something more kind of like about the story of your life.
Well, that's just an idea. I'm probably more committed to a memoir type book. Frank McCourt is the author of Angela's Ashes. And he wrote Angela's Ashes. He won the Pulitzer Prize. I'm pretty sure he won the Pulitzer Prize. He was 70 or 71 mm-hmm. when that book came out. That was his first book.
Wow.
He showed an aptitude for writing, for sure. And in fact, he became an English professor, or English teacher. And just because of, life, he just never wrote his book until he was 70 years old. Mm-hmm. And then to hit it out of the park.
Yeah, right.
Like, you win a Pulitzer Prize, and they buy the movie rights to your book.
Yeah.
They make a terrible movie, but at least they made a movie of your book. And it was a memoir of his youth, growing up in Ireland, essentially. I mean, during what would have been like the Great Depression here. And so that's always been a flame for me to look at, is like, hey, Frank McCourt did this at 70 years old.
Yeah.
Like, no matter what, I'm going to do this. But why wait?
No, you don't need to wait.
And the reality is when I think about goal setting, I think about the money I want to make and the things I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Writing a book shortens the lead time to success.
Yeah.
If I want to be more wealthy, to be able to do more things, then I have to do more things to get more wealthy.
Yeah.
So, I can't sit around here and wait for this book to...
Write itself. Now, after Sarah finished her bodybuilding competition the next week, Mark Mount came into our office. And I don't know how old Mark, I'm not going to try and guess how old you are. I'm going to guess maybe in your 60s. And he asked...
I'm going to say mid-50s. So
I don't know if he's listening to this. He asked Sarah, he's like, so, I know you were worried about what people are going to ask you, but I have to ask you, like, what's next? Are you going to do another competition? And she said, well, I'm going to sit back and kind of just bask in this for a minute and enjoy it. And he said, okay. She was like, oh, yeah, I'm not going to rush. And he said, rush. Don't wait. Rush. And I looked at him and I was like, I get it. Because he's looking at us and, and I'm 37 now and I absolutely feel like, I'm reminded constantly about some article or something or some book that we read where it talked about like what you just mentioned, like some people don't write a book or do a movie or anything like that until they're in their 40s, 50s, and 60s because you've lived a little bit of life and you have some wisdom, and but rush and do the things that you want to do, and I really took that to heart. And so yeah, I agree. I mean, how cool to write a book in your 40s and have it impact your life rather than waiting until. You're 70.
Well, who knows if I'm going to be around when I'm 71.
Well, yeah, that's, I hope.
And I've had a very interesting life.
Well, yeah.
I thought about this recently. When I was in college, my biggest regret was that I hadn't lived enough life to be a good writer.
Mm. I don't think that's true anymore.
No, I don't think it's true anymore either. But I remember being in college thinking I had led too safe of a life.
Yeah.
And too naive of a life that I didn't have any experiences to pull from.
Mm-hmm. I know what you mean.
And it felt very lonely.
Uh-huh.
And
I talk about this with my roommate Dan a lot, and Dan will probably never listen to this, but he said there's an absolute desire in every man he's talked to, and he's speaking about men specifically, to experience something. And if you don't go after that and you don't experience something, you feel like less of a man. Or you feel like there's absolutely always this yearning in you, which is why he went to Paraguay. Because he was like, I need an experience to man me up. I need an experience to form me into the human because I don't feel worthy right now, essentially. And so he totally believes that as well. Like, he just felt, I know he felt, that's why he did it right after college. So.
Yeah, I mean, I used to write about kind of dark and...
Kind of.
Edgy things.
Really dark. Rather,
well,
actually.
Just to give you an example, I won a writing award when I was 16. I apologize. I have a little bit of a tickle today.
Oh, maybe it's real ASMR.
ASMR. And anyway, I wrote this story. I submitted it for this contest. I never thought I'd win anything. So I won
the trip
prize.
Right?
Well, it wasn't first prize. It was like honorable mention, and it meant that my piece got published into this body of work. And it's kind of embarrassing for me to go back and read it now, because I mean, there's some genius stuff in there. There's some great writing in there.
Yeah.
And it's imagine I mean, it'd be like never having had sex before and then having to write about what it was like. Or, you know, that's basically what I was doing. I wasn't writing about, but I mean, that's the best analogy, I think, for it. Because in this story, which is a terrible, tragic story about this kid named Johnny Paris, whose mom is like a lady of the night in a small logging town. And she has a bad date with a logger who cracks a bottle open and stabs her with it, and he finds his mom's naked body, and it's about him getting a bus ride out of town.
Oh my God.
It's called Paris Leaving Alba, Michigan.
Yeah.
So it's Johnny Paris, this kid, leaving this town called Alba, and I just thought it was cool, so cool that it was Paris.
Is
a town leaving another town. That was the whole premise of the book. But somehow I went off into this super dark area. And the reason I did that is because I had this longing to experience life. And outside of the darkness, which I knew nothing about. I knew nothing about that.
Yeah.
I had no, no experience with that,
really.
And so it makes for bad writing if you don't know what you're talking about.
But at least you did it. The thing is, you did it and you tried it. And now you can look back at it. Like, if you had never done it, never written, never started anything because you didn't have experience, you know?
I wish I would have. I mean, I don't have many regrets in life because I don't see the point, right? I think we learn something from everything we do. And at the same time, if I wish I had taken some time after college to just kind of find myself.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't do that till I was 34,
mm-hmm.
and it's really uncomfortable
to do it
at that age versus like 24. So yes, I think I've experienced enough life now. I have enough to write about. I have enough contrast in life. Mm-hmm. I think that's the main thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know anyone who has more contrast in life than me, quite honestly.
Yeah,
and that's from my experiences growing up in a Protestant household,
mm-hmm.
You know, to moving to Seattle, which is a very diverse town.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sure there are people that have more diversity in life, more contrast than me. I just haven't met them.
Yeah.
And I think that's interesting.
Yeah.
I think that there's a whole lot of story in that.
Oh, yeah.
I think when my mid-30s were so filled with conflict,
mm-hmm.
because I was trying to reconcile this part of myself.
Yeah, you were, totally.
I was trying to reconcile the red state cowboy,
mm-hmm.
redneck, you know, to mm-hmm. this blue state coastal city
mm-hmm.
dweller.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not a liberal. I'm not a conservative.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, it's that funky gray area that people are so usually like afraid of, I think, too. And I think you just have to dig into it, which you did. You leaned into it. You dug into it. It got messy. Life got messy. And the more I've realized, though, the opportunity in that, the thing that I get, that I was always jealous of, which I'm not jealous anymore, because I definitely like identify with you in a little bit that there, when I made decisions after 18, it was very different than, I think, what my parents like would have chosen for me, because it was very safe. One of my aunts said the other day, Margaret, you grew up in the most benign like environment you could have grown up in. Like, you're given a place to flourish, basically, and kind of become yourself. But at the same time, I felt like I'd done the safe thing always. And so I think digging into that gray area, having those hard conversations like we talk about, and then like understanding that not everything's just so black and white, I guess. You have to embrace that. I just started listening to a podcast on the way to the office, actually, when we were coming back today, and it was on Oprah's Soul Sunday. I don't even remember who her guest was, but she was talking about the darkness. And she was basically saying, not just like the actual darkness versus light, but what are the dark topics or the dark things in your life? And if you don't embrace those and go into the darkness, you'll miss the most beautiful things. And I really liked that because I'm afraid of the dark, the literal dark, and you know that. And so I've been embracing it more and really trying to embrace it more because I'm realizing that the more that I embrace that, the better I become. Like, the better person I become, the more I realize about myself.
Well, it's like yin and yang, and I know that's cliche, but let me explain. You know the yin and yang symbol?
Yeah.
Which is the, like, the white drop and then the black drop?
Yeah.
But do you know that there's that black, small black dot in the white?
I think I've seen that.
And a small black white dot. And then basically the philosophy behind that is there's a little bit of darkness even in the light.
Mm.
And there's a little bit of light even in the darkness.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure someone knows more about that than me, and I could be wrong or messing it up, but I love that idea.
Yeah.
You cannot live this life ignoring the darkness.
No.
And pretending like it's not there. That's my whole life.
Yeah, yeah.
Is people...
There's a lot of fear around that.
And me
mm-hmm.
trying to pretend like the darkness doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
And vilifying anyone
mm-hmm.
that is outside of your comfort
zone.
What
you know, yeah.
And now I'm like a rebel now.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean is I'm ready to fight. Mm-hmm. I want to fight. Like, if you start to cast someone off or malign somebody, man, my claws come out.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway.
Hmm.
ASMR.
ASMR culture is great.
I like how we're just going to do ASMR bits to transition from one topic to the next.
That's the thing. I think we should
invite. Oh, we should do that from now on.
We should absolutely always do that.
Whenever we transition, we'll do it in ASMR.
I think we should invite an ASMR podcaster to come on and teach us about ASMR.
I don't have the patience for this.
Yeah, that's a great transition.
It is.
Yeah.
It is good.
What's next on the box of Jesse?
The box of Jesse? Yeah, what box
just,
are we
I don't know.
About?
That just popped out.
Here we go with your random words.
It's
again.
Like a Rubik's Cube.
Oh, goodness.
Rubik's, you know?
Drink some more whiskey.
I will. Thank you.
Well, you drink that whiskey. No, you know, I'm going to just go here because we're supposed to be highlighting that relationship. You're so proud. She just clicked her tongue and surprised herself.
I didn't expect it to be that loud.
All right. So, yeah, in planning for this retreat, we talked about this a little bit. And there's still some raw emotion around this. But you're drinking now, so I feel it's safe to bring it up.
Uh-huh. It's safe to bring it up.
And I like to provide some context, but not too much. This is your third annual Pacific Northwest admin retreat that you're planning.
Uh-huh.
The first one, you didn't even tell me you were doing it. Like, you just did it on your own.
I had a good happy hour with some people. And I think the first time I really talked to you about it was when I needed sponsorship. Because that's when I got, like, anxious about it. About doing it the right way.
Yeah, so, I mean, and that was pretty well into it.
I mean, at that point, yeah, I had the speakers. I had the idea. I had the house that I wanted to use. But I needed the money to do it.
Okay, so mm-hmm. fast forward. Second year, last
mm-hmm.
year.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit better mm-hmm. as far as planning. Like, mm-hmm. I wasn't too surprised because it had happened the year prior.
Yeah.
I did ask to be a little bit more informed.
Yep.
About it. And my contribution was to financially back it.
Yeah. Which means front all the money for
the speakers,
the house, the catering, all of that. Yeah. Which is a big deal.
That was my contribution.
That was huge.
And then in the final reconciliation, you just didn't make any money. Like, there wasn't extra money.
No. Well, there's like, $1,500 or something.
And so this year, the only thing I asked is I'd be more involved when it came to the financial planning of it. And so you've been actively reaching out to people.
Mm.
You don't ask me for permission, or
to reach out to the people.
Right.
No.
You don't run these people by me. I'm not saying that you should. I'm just being clear to everybody.
Yeah, yeah. No, I don't. You're very right. As you mentioned before, I ask for forgiveness, not permission. And also, this is something that I see as like It's something I want to do. I don't want to, I never want to burden you with extra things. It's like if you want to be involved or you want to play a part in it, which I knew you wanted to play more of a part of in the, like the financial planning of it. I do extra work outside of the hours of the office and I don't expect other people to. I guess that's my thing. I don't ask Sarah to, I don't ask anybody to because it's my choice. And I understand that this is like something I do on top of my regular job. This is the social worker in me. I don't know. What do you want?
Okay, so I'm getting off track. I'm just making a point, okay? Okay. So you're doing, you are choosing who you want to speak there. This is your baby. Yeah. I'm not trying to attach myself to it in any way, shape, or form. I'm just trying to provide some wisdom when it comes to...
I appreciate that.
How much to charge.
Yeah.
An operating budget.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. And so there's a speaker that you want to have who's twice as much as anyone we've ever thought of or talked to before.
Mm-hmm.
And my instant reaction is, ah, hell no. Right? And I'm not saying you. Yeah. I'm not telling you no.
Yeah.
I'm saying, based on my knowledge of the budget, the cost of the tickets, everything, it's really not scalable at a certain point.
Yeah.
And so I expressed some concern, which got your hackles raised a little bit.
Yeah.
So why is that?
Stretching. Well, I think this goes back to autonomy. And it's not that you, obviously you made a point of telling me, like, you're not trying to take over any part. You're, this is my baby, this is my thing. I don't like being told what to do. And I knew that you weren't telling me what to do, but you were cautious. And so, I don't know. This is the stubborn part of me, too. It's just like, if someone thinks that something can't be done or that it's impossible or that it's, like, not realistic, it just sets me on fire. Yeah. I'm going to do it.
Right, but...
And it's doing it for the right reasons. As I told you, when I talk to their EA and when I talk to the sponsors... I can't sign this person. I can't sign on the dotted line until I have half of the deposit, which is half of the amount, which is $7,500. And so, unless I have that, I will not be signing on the dotted line. And if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. But my intuition is telling me that it's the right thing to do. So. Yeah, but then we had a really like it was a funky day yesterday. But I still felt like, you know what, like. That conversation was so different than what it would have been 4 years ago, 5 years ago. And I appreciate that. So I know that you support me and I know that you want, just are trying to help me look at every angle and you're very concerned. And you're very good at finances. You're much better at it than I am. I know that. So I respect that.
I have to say, I was a little disheartened that it bothered you.
Why?
Because I thought we were past that.
Oh, no, stuff is still going to bother me.
I know stuff is going to bother you. But, I mean, like, from, I think I didn't feel like I said anything other than,
yeah,
hey, this doesn't make sense. Like,
yeah.
I wasn't saying no. I don't, I'm not even saying no to him. I'm just saying there's, this creates a whole lot more problems
that
we have to figure out.
I wonder what it is then that gets me, like, I don't see a problem yet, I guess. It's only a problem when the money can't happen. And I think I see the money happening because this is the third year in. I feel like I have a lot more content and a lot more backing up what I've done in the last 2 years. And so people see what I do on social media and see how I represent them and market them. And I think sponsors are going to start coming to me rather than me going to them. But you know that too, though, that reaction is something I'm very aware of, and I've worked on tempering it, and I still need to temper it, because you're not saying no, so why am I getting fired up? It feels like a no to me. So something in me is like, let's examine that, Margaret, because
it was disheartening because it derails us.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, yeah, it kind of derails us from.
Well, just got us kind of in a funk and.
Well, I mean,
feel like
changes,
we're not on the same page.
It changes the tone of the communication for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
I didn't feel like I had
you. I didn't feel like it was the rest of the day. Did you feel like it was the rest of the day?
I mean, I always feel like it's the rest of the day.
I feel like we get past stuff faster than...
Oh, we've gotten way better at it.
Yeah.
It used to be 7 to 10 days.
I don't know. I mean, you know me. I'm very independent, very stubborn. I think that's all it is, Jess, is like you're very stubborn and independent for sure. And I, that's where we butt heads. And I'm actually like, I'm super comfortable with it now. Because I know ultimately that might have been a hard conversation, but we're always going to come back around and be like, God, I'm going to cry. This is the whiskey. It doesn't worry me.
Cue Margaret crying.
So this is where someone might hit this conversation, another admin who's been in the business for less, and they would stop because they'd be really worried about losing their job. I'm going to offend him. I'm going to offend her. I'm going to say the wrong thing. I shouldn't be taking this kind of a risk. I shouldn't be doing this. I don't stop anymore because I know that we have that type of partnership where maybe it won't be great for the rest of the day, but we'll come back to it tomorrow and we'll talk about it. And I feel like we've reached a better understanding today about what you meant and what I misinterpreted maybe. So now I'm more myself than I've been at any other job, almost with any other human, like besides my close friends. You get the real me, which brings out the stubborn piece and that little fire in my belly, which I don't know if that's ever going to go away. But
yeah, I think that's it was interesting yesterday because, you know, because everything changed so quickly. Like, because I'm so sensitive to that,
yeah.
Right? I'm so sensitive to knowing
sure.
tonal changes, body language
yeah,
changes.
Yeah, you knew right away.
And
I'd also have an experience earlier in the day that allowed to
right. I need to be better about allowing those things to happen because I am a control freak. And if things are moving smoothly, I want them to continue moving smoothly.
Sure. I like
and
that
then
too.
I get a little
yeah.
prickly
I get it.
When
yeah.
things... deviate.
No, I agree. Me too. And we don't need to allow it to deviate like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How's that whiskey?
It's good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You didn't cry. I'm proud of you.
God, thank
good
you.
Good job.
No, I feel like the first cry on the podcast should be for something more important. Than
more
that.
Important.
Yeah.
Should I bring up babies, puppies?
No, that won't make me cry.
No.
Really?
Bradley Cooper.
You're really good. Oh, God, he's hot. He is. If you guys haven't seen that movie yet, Rising Star, Star is Born.
Rising Star. That's not called Rising Star.
Oh, my gosh. That scene where he's playing the guitar and she's walking around from behind the screens or whatever. I was like, oh, my God, he's just so yummy. That's what my mom would say.
Bradley Cooper,
yummy. Yummy.
Margaret.
Transition. Yes.
Transition. Mm-hmm. I think we should wrap this one up.
Really?
Well, I feel like, you know, so much went into that podcast that we had to delete yesterday. And we've covered a lot of territory here.
That's true. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, do you imagine it gets better from here?
I mean, it could.
But probably not.
Probably not.
Probably not.
I mean, we covered your...
We have families to get home to.
The cowboy.
You have your roommates.
Oh, my gosh.
You do. Your roommate and your tenant. So a landlord, a tenant, and a roommate.
Oh, my God. That sounds like a really good joke and a good time.
Margaret's going to go home, listen to a roommate play ukulele.
He's more into the guitar right now. He's trying to hone his guitar skills for the ladies.
And I'm going to go home and watch Survivor with my kids.
Oh, Survivor.
Yep.
Nice.
I like Survivor because, for my kids, I like to watch it with my kids.
Mm-hmm.
Because that whole show is about doing the hard thing.
Yeah.
You know, like, most of these people haven't camped, let alone, you know, be without any luxuries, like a bed or a mattress yeah. or a pillow or any of that. It's good. And then to see the people rise above and fight through and challenge themselves. And it's an intellectual game.
Mm-hmm.
So, I like it. It's one of the shows, one of the only shows I watch with my kids, probably.
Well, that's cute. I'm going to go home and listen to more ASMR.
Survivor.
Yes.
ASMR. Survivor. Until next time, everyone.
Goodbye.
Peace out.